Radio Prague News.
Public Affairs Deputy Chairwoman Carolina Peake has left the party, saying she intends to start a new political platform. The Ombudsman has severely criticized the conditions in the state's Center for Foreign Children, and Miroslava Nemtsova of the Civic Democrats has announced her decision not to run in the party's primary presidential elections. Leading public affairs figure Carolina Peake has left the party. The deputy chairwoman of the Junior Coalition Public Affairs Party made the announcement at a special press conference on Tuesday, saying that she disliked the style with which public affairs presents itself and intends to start a new political platform. Peake is the latest of several leading figures to leave the party in the wake of numerous scandals that have kept it in the front of public attention for the last several weeks. She notably broke with party chairman Radek Jon over the party's recent instigation of a government crisis, leading many to expect that public affairs would soon split along factions centered around herself and Vít Bárta, who was convicted of bribery last week. Regarding a step that further destabilizes the Czech governing coalition, Ms. Peake said Tuesday that she will adhere to the government coalition agreement and will speak with Prime Minister Petr Nečas about her continuation in the cabinet. While she said that the decision was her own and had been considered for some time, other members of public affairs would be welcome to join her. Recent support for Peake from those within the party suggests that as many as 7 party MPs may follow her out of public affairs, theoretically allowing the government to maintain a slight majority without the party's support. Ombudsman Pavel Varvarovsky says the Czech state has failed in its care for foreign children. In a press release, the ombudsman criticized the illegal isolation and maltreatment of children in the Perman Center in central Bohemia, which was established for the children of foreigners whose parents are unable to look after them, who do not speak Czech, and who may suffer from some previous trauma. Mr. Varvarovsky noted that the children lacked privacy and there were reports of sexual attacks among them. Moreover, many of the children in the facility speak Czech and therefore have no reason to be in the center at all. The Ombudsman's office warned of the mistakes 4 years ago and says nothing has changed due to the passiveness of the education ministry. Miroslava Nemtsova of the Civic Democrats has announced her decision not to run in the party's primary presidential elections. Ms. Nemtsova, who was seen as a hot favorite for the candidacy, said that as chairman of the lower house, she felt a responsibility for the stability of the lower chamber that had won out over her personal aspirations. The primary race will thus most likely be between Senate Chairman Přemysl Sobotka and MEP Evgen Toshenovsky. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be mostly cloudy, with highs of around 12 degrees Celsius. My name is Christian Falvey. That's the end of the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program: what's next for the smallest party in government, Public Affairs, following a guilty verdict last week for its de facto leader? We also report from the Pirate Party's international meeting in Prague. And be sure to stay tuned for today's special covering the ongoing Prague Writers' Festival. We'll be talking to acclaimed British author Hanif Qureshi on a number of topics, including the future of Islam.
I've no idea what the future of Islam will be. I don't even know whether it'll rain tomorrow or whether it'll be sunny. I've no idea.
Well, there you go. Author Hanif Qureshi. Much more coming up. That's all ahead. The leadership of the junior coalition party Public Affairs is meeting to debate the outcome of last week's trial, in which the party's informal leader Vít Bárta was found guilty of bribery. Although Mr. Bárta had promised to pull out of high politics if he didn't clear his name, he now says he'll keep his deputy's post in the lower house and thus remain a member of the party's deputies club. Daniela Lazareva asked commentator Jiří Pehe for his thoughts on how this latest development may impact the government's future and who is now actually running the smallest party in government.
In my opinion, Vít Bárta is still behind the scenes controlling the party. I don't think that any of his colleagues, although some of them now criticize him, carefully, but they do, is actually able to do anything significant without Barta's approval. So, yes, his trial and sentence have to some extent weakened his position in the eyes of the public. But I think that since the Public Affairs Party is really firmly built around Vít Bárta, it will be very difficult for any new leader to do anything without Bárta's approval or assistance.
What are the implications of all this for the coalition government?
Well, the coalition government is in trouble simply because, on the one hand, the coalition partners of the Public Affairs Party, Top 09 and the Civic Democratic Party would like Mr. Bárta to go and to simply disappear from the political scene. But on the other hand, since the Public Affairs Party is basically Bárta's project, it will be very difficult for the Public Affairs to do so.
The coalition partners have now said that they find Mr. Bárta totally continued presence in politics totally unacceptable. But as you say, either they will have to accept him for the coalition to continue, or the coalition will come to an end. Is that it?
I think that they will be looking for the kind of solution that would at least optically make Bárta look like he took a back seat and that he's not really involved in day-to-day politics or the public affairs. But in general, I think that there will be a lot of willingness on both sides to find some kind of agreement. We have gone through these various crises concerning the public affairs many times now, and in the end, they always found a compromise simply because the three coalition parties cannot really afford not to find a compromise because none of those parties can face any elections right now without suffering major damages.
If Vít Bárta were to agree to let go the reins and let Carolina Píg take over, which seems to be what many people would like to see happen, does Carolina Píg stand any chance of building a solid party here, or is there no future for public affairs without Vít Bárta?
Well, I think that there is no future for public affairs with or without Vít Bárta at this point. The party has discredited itself to the point that it cannot really recover. I have not seen a Czech political party that would go into this kind of political slump and then would come back. It simply has not happened in Czech political history after 1989, and I don't think it will happen with the Public Affairs Party. So, yes, maybe if Vít Bárta steps aside and will not be involved in day-to-day politics, the party will look a bit more credible, and maybe there will be fewer coalition conflicts. But on the other hand, I don't think that the party can recover under the leadership of Carolina Píg, for example, to the extent that it would be able to be a viable competitor in the next election.
That was political analyst Jiří Pehe talking to Daniela Lazarová about, well, in his view, the rather dire future for the smallest government party, Public Affairs. If you've been watching developments with Public Affairs and would like to comment, be sure to write to us here at Radio Prague. The address is english@radio.cz. We're always looking forward to hearing from our listeners and for your views. Now, though, pirates of the world unite. That was the message at this weekend's Pirate Party International meeting in Prague, the third in the organization's history and the first in the Czech capital. What started as a Swedish protest movement against the criminalization of file sharing has grown into a tangible political body, setting its sights on continent-wide success in the 2014 European Parliament elections. Rob Cameron has more.
This was the scene at the Hub co-working centre at the weekend as 25 pirate parties from all over the world set sail for Prague. Computer geeks in black T-shirts rubbed shoulders and swapped USB drives with civil liberties campaigners and newly elected Pirate Party council members. Pirate parties believe that global anti-piracy legislation, such as the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement, or ACTA, threatens the very foundations of democracy by eroding the right to privacy and the freedom of speech. It's the Orwellian underside of legislation such as ACTA, says the president of the Czech Pirate Party, Ivan Bartosz, that threatens the future of internet freedom.
I think it's more the fight of control of the internet. Because once you set up all those mechanisms, as for example ACTA, you can control almost anything that's happening in India. So we have to keep this freedom because no one can buy the internet.
What began as a marginal protest movement in Sweden with the legal case against the file-sharing site The Pirate Bay has mushroomed into a political movement that spans international borders. The Swedish Pirate Party won 7% of the 2009 European Parliament elections and now has two MEPs. An Austrian Pirate Party candidate was just this week elected to Innsbruck's local council. In Germany, meanwhile, the Pirate Party controls 15 of the 149 seats in the Berlin State Parliament. A recent national opinion poll put them on 13%, ahead of the Greens, the Left and the Liberals.
At our core, what we are fighting for is that the civil liberties that our parents enjoyed should carry over to the next generation of our children in the online world.
Rick Falkvinger, the spiritual father of the Pirate Party movement and the founder of Sweden's Pirate Party.
Our parents were able to send whatever they wanted in a letter, and unless they were under prior, formal and individual suspicion of a crime, that letter would reach its destination. I think it's entirely reasonable that our children should enjoy the same rights.
The delegates agreed in Prague that they will, if successful, form a Pirate Party grouping in the European Parliament, and a single pan-European Pirate Party may one day be formed. The tide does seem to be turning in their favour. The Czech Republic was one of a handful of countries whose government suspended ratification of ACTA after noisy protests by young people. Protests that were largely organised by Pirate Party members.
Okay, thanks Rob Cameron there for that report on the Pirate Party's international meeting in Prague and developments there. It's time now, though, for today's main feature, which is a special. Sarah Borufka spoke to the acclaimed British author Hanif Qureshi, who is visiting at this year's Prague Writers' Festival.
Undoubtedly the most famous guest at this year's Prague Writers' Festival, the British novelist, screenwriter and playwright Hanif Qureshi rose to international fame in 1985 with his screenplay for the film My Beautiful Laundrette. Since then, he published the novel The Buddha of Suburbia to great acclaim and continues to write extensively, both for the screen and newspapers as well as works of fiction. Ahead of his first reading at the festival in the Czech capital, I asked him about his work, why he enjoys the short story format, and if he had previously visited Prague.
I came to Prague probably about 20 years ago, and it's a great literary city for me. There are many writers here that I'm interested in, like Kafka and Kundera and the history of this city under communism and so on. So I'm very happy to be here and to meet people and to talk about their lives here.
And you are, of course, a guest of the Prague Writers' Festival. Could you talk a bit about which panel discussions, readings, etc. you will be performing?
I think I'm going to talk tonight about my work. I'm going to give a reading from a story I wrote called Weddings and Beheadings. And tomorrow we're going to talk about a very important subject, which is Islam and the meaning of Islam in the contemporary world. And talk about writing and its relation to religion. So it's going to be a very exciting festival this time.
And talking about Islam, I believe that discussion is titled, What is the Future of Islam? Could I get a sort of preliminary answer from you on that very complex question?
I've no idea what the future of Islam will be. I don't even know whether it'll rain tomorrow or whether it'll be sunny. I've no idea. But it's a way of talking about race. It's a way of talking about integration. It's a way of talking about religion. And it's a way of talking about freedom and writing and the meaning of creativity and the imagination.
And you wrote My Beautiful Laundrette. It came out in 1984 and it was massively successful at a time when you were still in your beginnings. How did you experience that very quick success?
You say it was a quick success, but in fact before I'd been writing for some time. I'd been writing for about 10 years. I've been working at the Royal Court. So it was a huge success and it changed my life and it enabled me to become a professional writer. And I was very surprised and amazed that this little film that I made with my dear friend Stephen Frears became successful, but it enabled me to become a professional writer.
And My Beautiful Laundrette and the Rainbow Sign deals with issues of race and identity, something that critics say is a recurring theme in your work. And I actually read one passage in which you write in Pakistan that someone said to you, "We are Pakistanis, but you will always be a Paki." And you then go on to state that you couldn't lay claim either to Pakistan or to England. And I was wondering if that has changed at all and if you have emancipated yourself, so to speak, from this need to belong to either one of these nations or cultures.
Well, I guess when you belong, you don't even notice it. I guess I belong in London. I'm part of the British literary culture, I guess. I write for a living and I don't feel torn between cultures. I don't feel I belong anywhere else. London is a great literary city, a great place to live and a great place to work.
In the same piece, you state that it is the white British who have to learn that being British isn't what it was. That was some 15 years ago. Have they learned?
I think there's a big struggle in Britain, which is really to do with making a multiracial, multicultural society. And it's been difficult to do. And there are many questions to do with race, to do with religion, to do with identity, to do with immigration and so on, and these questions are alive and people are working with them all the time. And as long as they're not suppressed, as long as they are part of the discussion, which they are, then something is alive, something is changing.
And of course in 1990 you published your novel The Buddha of Suburbia to great acclaim. It's set in the suburbs. What makes the suburbs to you interesting as a place for narration?
I don't think the suburbs are particularly interesting. It's just where I came from and where my parents were and where my youthful experiences to do with music, to do with rock and roll, to do with writing, to do with race, to do with fascism, to do with my childhood. It's where it all comes from, and I guess it's those subjects that I still write about.
And a lot of themes that you wrote about in that book or that can be found in that book, multiculturalism, hybridity, and so on, became later topics that everyone in Britain came to write about. But you were writing about it at a time when that was not part of the literary mainstream. Do you think it's good that it has become an issue that is written about a lot, or do you think it's getting to the point where it's a bit tiresome to be writing about this?
Well, I wrote about it because it was my experience. I was writing about my father, about my family, about my own history and trying to find my own place in Britain. But as Europe continues to mutate, to change, I think these issues in France, in Italy, Germany, Spain, Britain are really central to do with the relation between Europe and the rest of the world. These questions are really central.
And you said on BBC4 that you took a lot of suffering out of the Buddha. Maybe you could talk a bit about what kind of suffering it entailed to be a young Asian at the era when you were coming up in London.
I guess the suffering was to do with boredom, to do with the sense that you might never get out of the suburbs, and the suppression of creativity, and I guess the continuous racism of that time I probably took out. I wanted to write a book that was lively, that was exuberant, that was funny.
You have a lot of short stories you've written. You're attracted to the form. Could you talk a bit about what this form enables you to do that maybe a novel or a screenplay would not?
The short story is a wonderful form, and I guess you can do it because it's quick. So recently, let's say, I was in Pakistan, and then I went from Pakistan almost straight away to Paris. And I was thinking, wow, what's the difference between, you know, Karachi and Paris? How can I... And I wrote a story about a woman who lives in Paris and lives in Pakistan. And I wrote it very quickly, and it was done, and I could say what I wanted to say, and I will publish it soon. So it's the quickness. A novel takes a lot of time, it's a lot of thought, it's a big thing to do, whereas the story, you do it, it's like a photograph. Wonderful.
And I read a recent piece that you wrote for the New York Times in which you deal, amongst other things, with the topic of dyslexia, and you say, If the Ritalin boy prefers obedience to creativity, he may be sacrificing his best interests in a way that might infuriate him later. I found that very interesting. Could you talk a bit about what kind of themes you discuss in this piece?
Well, the piece was really about concentration. And we live in a very competitive world, and the kids want to get jobs and they want to succeed in the material world and so on. But the sacrifice may be of creativity, it may be of the imagination, it may be of your free mind. If you could take a drug that enabled you to concentrate on your homework, if you could take a drug that would enable you to concentrate on whatever at the time your parents wanted you to concentrate on, it may be that you're missing out on other things that are much more interesting. So it's really an essay in favor of the libido, that the libido knows where it wants to go and it sees something interesting and exciting. And that a drug like Ritalin is a kind of policeman.
And you must keep a terribly busy schedule. Maybe you could talk a bit about what is ahead after the festival, what you're working on, what projects you may be involved in.
I'm writing a novel. I'm writing some short fiction. I'm writing a movie. I'm always, I'm writing some essays. I've got tons of stuff that I'm doing. And I teach as well, so I'm busy.
And so what do you do when you're not working to relax or unwind? Is there anything?
Well, I guess I hang out with my kids. I've got three teenage children, So I spend a lot of time with them, and mostly we watch soccer. We watch football. We're interested in what our team, Manchester United, are doing.
British author Hanif Qureshi, the writer of such books as The Black Album or The Buddha of Suburbia, was talking to Sarah Borufka in this week's special coverage there from the Prague Writers' Festival. If you've enjoyed his novels or would like to comment on that interview, once again, do contact us here at the station. English@radio.cz is the address to write to. Also, you can find more news and stories and that report in text and sound again at our website. Radio.cz is the address to go to. We're moving now, to the final portion of today's show, which is a continuation of our long-running Czech language program, now in reruns, the ABC of Czech with Pavla Horáková and Vladimir Tax.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's special Czech language series focusing on idioms about wild growing plants. We've already done trees and their parts, and today we won't go far from that topic. We'll be looking at the words wood and forest in Czech phrases and idioms. The Czech word for wood or timber is
dřevo.
In metaphorical use, it also means a clumsy person. One can also sleep like a piece of wood.
Spát jako dřevo.
People can be stupid like wood.
Hloupí jako dřevo.
Or deaf like wood.
Hluchý jako dřevo.
Although Czechs more often say
hluchý jako poleno.
As deaf as a log or
hluchý jako pařez.
As deaf as a tree stump. The expression
sladký dřevo
or sweet wood is a poetic name for a guitar. The short Czech word
les
means a forest.
Nosit dříví do lesa
is to carry wood to the forest, or to use an English idiom, to carry coals to Newcastle. If a child is growing up without enough supervision, if he or she is allowed to run wild, Czechs say
roste jako dříví v lese.
He or she is growing up like timber in the forest. About people who can bear a lot, who let people behave badly to them and do not protest, Czechs say
nechá na sobě dříví štípat.
He lets others to chop wood on him, or he lets people walk all over him. The next expression has a similar meaning to the English phrase you can't make an omelette without breaking some eggs. It goes
když se kácí les, lítají třísky.
And the literal translation is, when a forest is being cut down, splinters fall, meaning there are unpleasant side effects to important things. Another idiom,
pro stromy nevidět les,
means not to see the wood for the trees. The meaning is the same in both Czech and English, to be so involved in the details and not realize the real purpose or importance of the things as a whole. And finally, one moralizing phrase,
jak se do lesa volá, tak se z lesa ozývá.
The way you shout at the forest, the way the sound comes back. The closest English idioms would be you get as much as you give, or what goes around comes around. And with that, we shall leave you today, but you can tune in again next for more Czech idioms about wild plants. Until then, naschledanou.
Well, they say said goodbye, but we're still here. We're just going to give you a quick reminder to look us up on the social networks. That's Facebook and Twitter, if you'd like to find out the latest and latest stories that people are commenting that we've broadcast here at Radio Prague, and where you can also discuss the ABC of Czech with Pavla Horáková if you're a long-time fan or just a listener who's maybe discovered it recently. We're out of time, I'm afraid, for this day. I'm Jan Wellinger. For myself and for all my colleagues here at Radio Prague, we want to thank you so much for joining us, and take care.